It is one of those things where, like, I hate to, it sounds so hyperbolic, but, like, we're probably not going to see a lot of people like Max, even if we watch MMA for, like, 10 more years, right? Like,
welcome back to Two Fight Fans Podcast, a podcast where we talk about all the happenings in combat sports worlds. I am your first fan, Colin.
And I'm the other Stuart.
Today, we are talking about everything that happened at UFC 300. So,
first of all, A lot happened.
First of all, we talked about this before, but UFC 100, great. UFC 200, not as great. UFC 300, I would say it was fantastic. I would say it was better than all both 100 and obviously 200 then. But this was a great card. It lived up to all the hype and everything. I those 7 hours I spent just sitting watching fights all day, well worth it. Well worth it.
Yeah, it was pretty phenomenal. It's definitely, it feels like a top five fight card. Probably in top five that I've seen. And I think most of it has to do with just that BMF title fight. Because if that's removed, let's say that just fight never happens on the card. Instead of a 13 fight card, it's a 12 fight card. I think we suddenly lose about 50, 60% of the magic off of the card overall. But yeah, really phenomenal. It really did live up to it. And the crazy thing is, because I watched it as well from like 3 p.m., it really ebbed and flowed. And it felt like, you know, it starts off like a pretty typical fight card. Then we start getting some silliness when we hit the Jalen Turner, Hanata Moicano fight.
Oh my God, yeah.
And then we're moving through the prelims. We've got the Jiří Prochazka, Alexander Rakic fight, which is like kind of heating things up. Bo Nickel comes on. Yeah, and then it just, so it was crazy because I was worried. I was like losing interest, and then, oh, then it gets better, and then, oh, a little dip, and then, oh, it got really, I mean, then it got really good. Then it got one of the best moments in MMA I've ever seen. And then we had two title fights after that, which was pretty exciting. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Well, why don't you start us off? What's one of the big moments of the night that you really loved? Or didn't love, maybe the thing you hated most about the card.
All right. Yeah. Actually, let's start at the top then. So it's kind of like you said, if the BMF title fight was like the highlight, but if you took that away, it already loses some of its magic. I will say that in the prelims, like the early prelims, like it opened up not bad with Garbrandt, Figueiredo, Green and Miller. All of them were just they were still entertaining fights. The next two though were probably the two fights that I was most upset and frustrated about. The Andrade Rodriguez and the Jalen Turner and Moicano fight. Simply because it was actually like not the exact same issue, but with Andrade and Rodriguez, like, no fight plan seemed to be in place. Like, each time, it's like what we talked about earlier, like each time one of them started to find success, they just were like, I'm not gonna do this anymore. And it was just like kind of upsetting to see.
it is really amazing that in some of these divisions, quote-unquote elite level or the higher end of the current crop of fighters, which I think it's an important distinction to make, right? Like,
yeah,
you could be in a really low period for a specific division, and like, it doesn't mean you're necessarily elite. You just are like the best at that moment. There's fight IQ just doesn't, it still doesn't quite exist in MMA the way it should.
Yeah.
The way it does in boxing. It's it really is just a very rote. Like, I practice these combinations. I practice this specific thing, and regardless of the outcome that I get during the fight, if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I'm just going to keep doing it. It's very frustrating.
Yeah. Because, like, in the Andrade Rodriguez fight, either one of them could have won the fight. Like, they each, I felt, took the first one round apiece at the start. So going to the third round, they each knew what was working, and that both of them did none of those things to make it work. So I was just like, okay, like this is either really bad, like, coaching or really bad listening on the fighter. And either way, like, yeah, I just was not. I was impressed with their each individual rounds where they won, and then when they did nothing to capitalize on it, I was like, okay. Like, I don't think you can do anything at a championship level then.
Yeah, it's women's MMA, right? Like, so at the, they could, right? Andrade already won a championship.
Yeah.
You know, Marina Rodriguez is a world Muay Thai champion. Yeah. Or maybe she's just a Brazilian national champion. But like, right, they have a claim with just I have this skill set. No need for me to learn head movement. I wasn't listening to what people were, what the corners were saying in between rounds.
They didn't have it because of those early prelims. So.
That's right. Yeah, from what I've seen, like, Jessica Andrade is in a very, very tiny gym that specializes in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So it could be a lack of coaching staff on the part of, like, how to win a stand-up fight. Marina Rodriguez, though, I don't know. It was a bit of a bummer. It was a bummer to watch that. I mean, it was a bummer. In that same instance, it was a bummer to watch the, like, Bobby Green, Jim Miller one, right? I was like, Jim, you can't just keep walking forward. Like, let's try circling as we enter. Let's try a double leg. Let's try anything. Let's throw a feint. Let's do something other than just sacrifice your face in order to walk forward.
Very
disappointing. Yeah. Very disappointing.
But I was more disappointed, actually, with the Jalen Turner and Moicano.
Oh, bro. I tell you, man. These guys really do have, like, certifiable donkey brains. It really is upsetting. It was. Well, set it up. Set it up for people who maybe didn't see the very early prelims.
All right. So, round one, Jalen Turner obviously outclassing on the feet. Like, the striking mismatch was, like, it was so apparent. And he knocked Moicano down and tried to do a walk away, like, KO. But the guy was not knocked out. And, like, there were, like, 3 or 5 seconds left of the round and allowed Moicano to, recover enough that they go into the second round. And Moicano just, like, submitted him within, like, the first, what, 2-3 minutes of it?
Yeah, like, I think it was in the first, like, yeah, 2 minutes.
And the thing was, like, when they went to the ground, Turner tried to pull, like, butterfly guard, and then Moicano literally just, like, stepped over it. Like, it looked so easy for him. I was like, wow, this was, like, not only did you go from, hey, I would have won this match, to just, like, so easily show not only, like, are you aware of what's going on in your fight, but, like, you have this huge weakness in your game. But I think the funniest part, though, was Moicano was not prepared for his post-fight interview with Joe Rogan afterwards.
Oh, dude.
Because it was just, like, I don't know if he just was hyped in the moment for getting this big win or didn't realize he wasn't on pay-per-view right now because, like, everything he's saying was just so wild and out of field there. Like,
dude, it was. I will never forgive Jalen Turner for subjecting us to the Hanato Moicano post fight speech. That was just insane conspiracy theories, shouting nonsense, begging Joe Rogan to come on his podcast. It was just so. I was just sitting there being like, oh God, please get this guy off the mic. This is killing me.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was amazing to see, especially because, so he knocks him down, right? He's doing a really good job about, like, controlling the distance. He's, anytime Hanato Moicano tries to get close, he's always at least pumping out a jab cross, or he would do a cross right hook or cross left hook. And then the second round, after he does that, you can see he comes out, and I don't know if he's just, like, frustrated or he's like, oh, I got him. This will be no issue. But then as soon as Hanato Moicano pushes forward, Jalen Turner is not throwing with the same volume as he was before. Like, he suddenly is like, ooh, I can be able to snipe him. I don't need to throw any volume to like set anything up. And then without that volume to deter Moicano from getting close, he's able to wrap up and take him down. So it was just like, what? Where was your head at, man?
Yeah.
This is, yeah. I mean, this really, I mean, it happened later too, right? Like this is in MMA until the ref stops it. Like it's not over. Like you have to keep, have to keep going. Right. And it's the ref's job to step in between when somebody is hurt. Like it is when Mark Hunt would get those walk-off KOs, it was always impressive. But usually, even if he tried to follow up, he might have landed one extra punch. But people were so unconscious that the refs usually could step in time. But Jalen was just going for a moment. He was, wasn't trying to keep it real. Keep your hands up, man. Like, just keep going.
Just wanted that 300K bonus there. And
dude.
Walked away with an L instead.
I know. Walked away with half his money. God, yeah. And it's like, that's when Moicano was so dazed. Like, I bet Jalen would have been able to finish him in the first if he just followed up. It's not
even
like...
Even if he only had like 5 seconds or whatever.
God, yeah. I mean, that's the kind of silly thinking that gets you a loss to Renato Moicano and drops you out of the top 10. Right? Like, jeez Louise. What a bummer.
Yeah.
But
then from there, I think in the like the rest of the fights, in the prelims, they're not bad. I liked all of them for the most part.
I called that Kayla Harrison fight wrong, didn't I? Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know how many more times she could cut down to 135, like that. Seeing her at the weigh-ins, I was like, "Whoa!" Like that is yikes.
She was gigantic. And she looked anytime that she grabbed a hold of Holly. My wife even said, "It's like it looks like an adult playing with a child." Like it looked bad. And the crazy thing is, Holly was like, "What if I try to clinch up?" I think she listened to our podcast and was like, "You know, Stewart said I might be stronger than Kayla Harrison. Why don't I see if I can out-grapple her?" And she tried to do that, and that did not work at all.
I think that because we brought this up last time, like Holly Holm became famous for, dismantling another famous judoka in Ronda Rousey. But the difference between Harrison and Rousey, well, one, obviously the size, but two, Harrison did not think, let me outbox this boxing world champion right here. She was like, "Nah, I'm good. Let's go right to what I became famous for," and had a clear, clear advantage in all of those areas.
Yeah. She had a game plan.
Yeah.
And she had head movement. Like she was, I mean, it was very like rote, just like, I'm going to kind of like a metronome move back and forth, but better than Ronda Rousey just being like, "What if I keep my chin very high and run forward?" Right. Like Kayla is definitely still extremely stilted on the feet. It doesn't look like she quite has hand-eye coordination there naturally. But once she grabbed a hold of Holly, it's exciting to see, right? Like I want to see her fight Raquel Pennington. I think she should be able to win the title.
Do you think she will get that title shot and be champ by the end of the year?
I don't know if by the end of the year, right? Like, a lot of these fighters, which, like, was something that on this card especially, was, like, fighters calling their shot. And the UFC just is less and less inclined to do that with people. They're just there to fill up a schedule exactly the way they want to fill it up, regardless of kind of what timeline or, like, what would be an interesting narrative for the fans to watch. Because I think it'll probably be Juliana Pena fighting against Raquel Pennington. And then, depending on the turnaround time. Though I could see that they don't really care about Juliana Pena, who keeps pulling out during due to injury. Mm-hmm. Which, it's like, no issue there, right? If you're injured, you don't want to go into a professional fist fight and like possibly give yourself a disadvantage and lose half of your money. So they might just give it to Kayla, right? They might just say, like, "Yep, we can just slot Kayla in." But I think it's going to come down a lot more to where's an open spot on the calendar? When can Raquel Pennington fight? Is Kayla Harrison willing to? You know, they might tell her, like, "Oh, yeah, we have it open in, like, 6 weeks. Can you fight then?" And her be like, "I can't make the cut in 6 weeks. I need more time to prepare for it."
Yeah.
And then it goes to Peña. So I don't know. It'd be great if they did make that happen, so that we could see her do it in a year. And then, because, yeah, looking at her, probably what I would say, I as a human being don't want to see her, I mean, cut weight that much weight ever again. But if she's going to.
Yeah.
Probably one or two more times. So probably fight for the belt. And then Amanda Nunes said, like, the second the post-fight interview was done, she sent out that video. And it's like, well, just why don't you just come back and fight? You don't need the belt for it. Like, we'll all know who the real badass is if you come back and fight her. Like, just do that.
That I would be really excited for that fight.
If
Amanda Nunes came back.
Yeah, it'd be like, that's the only fight that's worthwhile having Amanda Nunes around for again. I mean, unless we just want her to keep squashing people. so just do that, right? Let Raquel Pennington and Juliana Peña do their thing. Just pay Amanda Nunes and Kayla Harrison a good amount of money, and then just stick them as like a co-main event on a pay-per-view. Put it on the Conor McGregor one, right?
Ooh.
Because what they do now with the Conor McGregor ones is they only have him, and then they don't really have any other ranked fighters fight on his cards anymore because he doesn't ever want to share pay-per-view points. So just give Amanda Nunes and Kayla Harrison a lot of money, not have any pay-per-view points, make it the co-main event.
Look at you.
Easy. It's not hard. Like, everyone thinks it's very hard. It's not hard. There's nothing to you.
That is a quick turnaround time for Kayla Harrison if she did that, because I think they announced it's like for International Fight Week, which is like what, June 30th or something, or whatever is the last card of June. But anyway, what else in the prelims did you like or did not like before we get to the main card?
Well, Diego Lopez comes out with the most insane haircut, English language tattoos, even though he doesn't speak English, like just a shit eating wild man. And body Sadiq Youssef. I'm excited to have him. Suddenly, dude, featherweight, suddenly, when Topuria won, I was like, wow, there's not a lot of, like, contenders in this division. Because Max is moving up, so maybe he won't come back. We only really have Mosar Evloev waiting for Topuria to fight. You could do Brian Ortega, though I've never really been impressed with Brian Ortega. Or Yair Rodriguez, but we saw Yair Rodriguez like really crumple against Brian Ortega. Or you do the Volkanovski rematch, which I don't want to see an immediate one. But now we've got Diego Lopez. I mean, we're going to get to Max Holloway later, but we got Max Holloway. We've got Aljamain Sterling now in the mix. It was that was a pretty boring fight, but he did win. He secured a win against like a top 10 fighter.
And totally neutralize them too. Like, it's not just like, I know people really don't like Sterling's style, but he basically made Calvin Kattar like, I think they said he landed a total of like 10 or five, like something ridiculous.
Yeah, five significant strikes. Yeah.
Like, that's ridiculous. And he did powerbomb him in one of the rounds, which was pretty like ridiculous.
I thought that was an illegal move, but I guess not.
I think if he slammed him on his head, like on his neck, it would have been, but because he pulled it a little bit forward, it landed more on his like upper back shoulders area, I think.
But I don't even think that like he purposely pulled like, ooh, I manipulated him in space. No, I think Calvin Kattar just like curled up, so he's like, I hope my neck doesn't break. Like, I think it was more of a Calvin move than it was an Aljamain.
It
is extremely impressive what he does. And I never had as big of an issue as I think a lot of people have with him and like his style. This one, though, there was a moment where he, I think it's in the third round, he shoots for a double leg and he like entirely, he wraps around the back of the knee. He's not up on the thigh. And he kind of almost does like I don't know what it's called. Like left leg goes around. It's almost like an outside reap as he turns the corner. So he like totally, and they both land basically on their side, and then Calvin Kattar grabs Aljamain Sterling's legs as well. So they're both kind of like, you know, north south position, holding each other's legs, laying on their side. And seeing that, I realized like Aljamain Sterling shot for that takedown and like went for a technique that would work in wrestling because it would count as a takedown, right? He landed on his side, but there was no way for him to really progress from that position. He wasn't thinking in a mindset of like, okay, I'm going to get a takedown and I want to try to, like, you know, when you watch Daniel Cormier get his single legs, he's always trying to land basically chest to chest and in either half guard or side control so that he can progress to the next position. Whereas this one was like Aljamain Sterling just entirely selling out, going like, it doesn't matter if the fight stalls as soon as I get this takedown, because like there's no way for me to progress because there'll be no way for him to progress. So it is a little bit of his, like, he's using techniques that sell out to get, you know, get essentially the points, but like there is no advantage once he finishes that technique.
Right.
And that was a little annoying. I was like, you've got this guy so thoroughly. Yeah. Like, why don't we do something that isn't right? That would make sense if he was against like Henry Cejudo or another like elite wrestler. But it was clear after two rounds, like, dude, you've got this guy's number. Like, just let's start progressing with a bigger clip. So I want him to fight Evloev after this. They're like two squirrels fucking, like just rolling around on the ground. That's what I want to see. So yeah, that was good. And then I know I've talked a lot. Do you want to talk a little bit about, because I know you enjoyed the fight a lot more than I did, the Jiří Procházka Alexander Rakic fight? Because fuck me, dude. I think this is exactly where our tastes in MMA and fighting diverge. Because goddamn.
So here's the thing. This was a great example of like it doesn't matter how much strategy, how much technique you bring to it. If your opponent happens to just have that insane knockout power, they always stand a chance. And you have to essentially plan for that. Like, Rakic was great in the first round. Like, he looked so good. He was getting so much success with those leg kicks. You know, and it's one of those things where, like, I don't know if just Procházka, like, is immune to them or just need more time for the damage to build up. But it was like he just wasn't as affected by it as Rakic thought or anticipated, because like basically Rakic was controlling the fight and Procházka didn't land or throw anything. And then he has like one combination that just blew up Rakic. And you know what? The way this fight is summarized was with Bilal Muhammad's tweet afterwards, when he said, "Jiří is all toughness and no IQ."
Yeah, it was. God, it was so frustrating to see. Yeah, it's interesting because it's the same thing with like Max Holloway. The commentary team kept commenting on like Max, like, "Oh, he's just so tough. Like, he doesn't show that his leg hurts." Whereas Jiří was a little bit more like hesitant. But like, if you watch them both leaving the cage, they both are limping. But they were able to kind of no sell it and push through, which is pretty amazing. Because like, at some point, the soft tissue of your fucking leg is damaged, and so it's not a matter of like I just will it through it. It's like your leg will give out when you like put too much pressure on it. Like, it's not gonna hold.
So usually, you need a strong stance to throw with your upper body or throw power punches. You know, so that's like an easy thing to be like, okay, if you have power, like start taking away, chipping away at it. You know, or like negate a range advantage, you know, so that they're not as mobile.
Mm-hmm.
But in both of these situations, it seemed like,
Oh, dude, just... it drove me nuts. It was just like, it makes the world, it really highlights like the unfairness of life and the cosmic injustice of everything. It just was like this person who was especially compared to a lot of his previous fights, he was much more disciplined. He was much more disciplined with keeping his guard in the right place, returning his kicks when he threw them, because he used to have a tendency to like land a kick and then just kind of let his leg slide down and kind of like drag back slowly. He was returning his kick to his stance properly. He was controlling the range, right? He wasn't like overreacting as much as he used to. And Jiří Procházka didn't try anything like crazy or new. He just kept like nodding and then like throwing jabs that were like almost straight arm lifting up, like he was doing shoulder raises, you know, like, and then not returning his punches. He would like punch and leave it in the air like he was in an anime being like, check out this punch. And it just eventually I think like it really did seem that Rakic just kind of like freaked out. You know, not like I don't think freaked out as in like he got scared or anything, but like after landing that many kicks and after like hitting. I mean, I will say Rakic's his actual technique with his hands, like the mechanics of his punches, were not very good. But neither were Jiří's.
Yeah.
And then Jiří just like kept coming. It was almost like he was like Michael Myers, just fucking like there's nothing you can do. He's just gonna keep walking towards you slowly until he eventually gets to you. And I was like, this is just so unfair. Like, this person, look at all the time and effort that they probably took to drill these kicks, to drill strategy, to like make sure that their technique is correct, to make sure that their game planning is correct. And Jiří just comes in like a total jock and is like, whatever, bro, I'm just gonna like, I'm a samurai, bah, and he wins. And I was like, gah, this is, oh, and also again, it's like, great, okay, so now we have this guy, Jiří, who is like, gonna murk everyone just because he has like 100 points in athleticism and no points in anything else. But when he gets to the title, like it's just gonna go the same, right? Like he doesn't have technique, and Pereira can hit way too hard for him to get away with that. So it becomes this weird bottleneck of like he can defeat all these other people, but not because of skill. You know, it's not an Alexander Volkanovsky, Max Holloway situation. It's like there's just this weird like, I don't know, like automaton that like defeats everyone before they get to the final boss.
It's terrible. It's kind of like a lesser version of Pereira. Like he has knockout power, and that's like all he relies on there.
You know? I mean, I resent that. He threw a beautiful left hook and he timed it super well, right? Like. That final left hook, we'll get to it when we get... Or no, let's just jump to the main event really quick, right? Because this is a very quick fight to talk about.
Okay. You want to start with that one then?
Yeah, we got to compare and contrast. So first of all, his outside leg kick, like the technique on it is extremely unconventional, right? He doesn't pivot at all. And it's almost, I mean, it is much more Muay Thai than like a San Chow, right? He's not chambering the kick, really. He's just kind of swinging it. But the guy must have bones made of like fucking adamantium because it looks like it hurts. But if you noticed, every time Jamal Hill, every time Pereira would take a like that little tiny step forward and get into range, Jamal Hill would throw, he would do a lead hand cross. And every time he would do that, his hand would cross almost like he was holding his stomach. Like he's like, you know, like had like, you know, gas pain. And that's where his jab hand would go, right? His left hand. So he would cross and then his hand would go down there. So Alex Pereira slowly was inching forward. He gets kicked in the cup and then he waves off Herb Dean, which was like a very cool movement. That was,
Oh was my very God. Cool. Yeah.
It was like a, It's the second. I think it's the second coolest. I know the finish is right after that, but when Demetrius Johnson got nailed straight in the plums by John Dodson, and he waves off Herb Dean because he's like, no, I gotta. My whole strategy is to tire out John Dodson, so I'll take this kick in the nuts so I can tire him out. But very cool, right? He like holds out his hand to Herb Dean and is like, don't come near me. But then
blows up Hill.
But you notice he reaches out, he touches his jab hand, he takes that little step forward. What does Hill immediately do? Hill throws the cross because that's his counter. Anytime he gets into range, his hand goes right down by his stomach, and Pereira didn't even like wind up or throw the hook fully, right? It wasn't, he hadn't even returned his hand fully back to its like resting position. So it was cocked a little bit more. His hand was still out probing. But he saw that the cross was coming and he knew, oh, he drops his hand. And so he just threw like, I don't know, a half hook or like a quarter hook and got him. Like the timing was so perfect. And he had read that. I mean, of course, Jamal Hill is not the most savvy and technical guy, but like that was a perfect read, right? Jiří Prochazka had no perfect reads. Jiří Prochazka did not see any of the techniques that Rakic was throwing and go, I've got this. I've got the timing. I know exactly when he does this. He leaves a hole here. And that's exactly what Pereira did. It was very impressive, right?
But that's what I'm saying. It's like Prochazka doesn't have the same knockout power as Pereira. That's obvious. But like he relies on his power.
Yeah.
And it's just like a toned down version then of Pereira. So like if you have any hope of getting to the championship fight, you should need to go through Prochazka to deal with that kind of power. It's like, okay, you've dealt with that, but here's someone who has more of that plus skill now. So like,
yeah,
you know, he's a good, he'll be a good filter for the, for
yeah,
the championship. But
yeah,
because I don't see Yuri developing a sudden skill set, you know, to take on Pereira, you know.
No.
And dude, Pereira, like we talked about in our last episode, like he is fucking real deal. Like we all knew like his power and his like very specialized like stand up abilities were like incredible. But oh my god, like I was not expecting just that level of just explosiveness. And it really makes it feel like, okay, like there's no one who can like really handle this, you know. What is someone going to do, you know? And
actually, if anyone's going to do anything, it's going to be either Onkalayev, who has very good wrestling and extremely potent top control, or because Pereira is still very susceptible to getting hurt, right? He keeps his chin very high. He doesn't have very sophisticated defense. You're going to get someone, like, and as much as I hate invoking this guy's name, because I can't stand him either, Johnny Walker, you're going to get someone who's just a freak athlete who throws, like, a flying double fist punch, and it just happens to land, right? You're going to need someone who has kind of similar firepower, who just charges forward, and because Pereira is not as defensively responsive as I'd like him to be, he gets hit.
So you think there's still work for him to be done at 205? You think that, I don't want to say he cleared out the division, because he's you know, he's only fought like twice at that weight, or three times now. What do you think is next for him? Because I kind of like what he said. He's like, at the end of his fight, he's like, yeah, I'm not that hurt. Let's do something else at 301 in Brazil. Like, in like 6 weeks or something.
Yeah, 3 weeks.
There you go.
Yeah. No, I mean, again, this is this thing where it was the same with Kayla Harrison. Like I said, like, I think they should let him, right? If somebody shoots his shot and he's the champion, he's earned it. Like, give him what he wants. If you're the UFC, right? Why? This guy's 36, right? He might not be around for more than like 2 years, right? Yeah, we shouldn't be having him fight once or twice a year. Like, if we can let's get as much out of him as we can. Let him make as much money as he can, right? Feed the fans' appetite. He's clearly extremely popular.
Yeah.
Like, let's get him in. Why not? He weighed, I think he said there was a...
235.
Yeah, 235. Like, fuck it. Like, he doesn't need to cut weight. He's in phenomenal shape. Like, let's get him in there. And I would pick him to beat a lot of the dudes at heavyweight. All right. Yeah.
So that's my question to you now. Can Pereira be the first three-division champ? Which is something I didn't think would ever be possible. And I saw this happen in one championship where the heavyweight has gone down to light heavyweight and middleweight and has won the belt simultaneously in all three.
Uh-huh.
But I kind of chalked that up to, like, okay, who's actually in that organization and in those higher weight categories? Like,
aren't their weight classes closer together?
I think they're the same, at least for the heavier ones.
I know that there's something different about those, like that Anatoly Malkin. I think one of them, maybe he won. Let me see.
So weight divisions. No. Yeah, heavyweight is maximum 265. Light heavyweight 225. Oh, 225. And middleweight's 205. Yeah. So they are a bit heavier.
Yeah. And did he win every one of those titles in the MMA division, or did he win all of? Oh, okay. He did.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I knew that there was something that was like, it was slightly different than if somebody had done it in the UFC, but you're saying it's the weight.
Yeah. It's much more, their weight is different. And it's, I'm looking at this now. They also have like, guidelines for like weight cutting and things.
Yeah, but like, who? Nobody's actually following those. let's see. Well, okay. So who would be like the two big threats to him at heavyweight? I mean, I'm gonna. This here is my hot take. I don't think John Jones ever fights again. Though I said that before the Cyril Gane fight, I didn't think he'd ever fight again. And then I don't think Stipe Miocic, if John Jones doesn't come back, I don't think Stipe Miocic. So barring those two, you've got Tom Aspinall, and you've probably got Curtis Blaydes as the two biggest challenges to him. I would pick probably both of those guys to beat him.
Really?
Yeah. I think Tom, I mean, Tom
Aspinall. Curtis Blaydes would beat him?
And Curtis Blaydes is, it cuts down to 265, and he can, I mean, he took down Alistair Overeem and absolutely mauled him, right? If we're comparing someone that had a kickboxing resume beforehand and actually had a more, a larger variety of skills and was more fast and had better footwork, like, yeah, I would probably say. But then, but why not, right? You could have him beat number two Ciryl Gane. Have Ciryl Gane fight him. Have, fuck, we have a Derek Lewis headliner coming up the week after this UFC 301. Pull Derek Lewis off of that fucking card and have Derek Lewis fight this guy, right? Either way, one of those dudes is getting knocked out, like, and then he breaks into the basically the top 10. Why not?
Yeah. That's true.
Like, give this guy a shot, because otherwise we have to wait to see him. And who knows if he gets hurt? Who knows if an opponent gets hurt? Like, if he's ready, he wants to do it in Brazil, give it to him. Yeah, or give him Volkov. Give him Pavlovich. Give me anyone, right?
Yeah.
That'd be great.
I would love to see him. I would love to see what happens there. And that could build some incredible, incredible hype and storylines for him.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Returning to your question about did he clear out the light heavyweight division, I don't think so, right? He hasn't beat Magomed Ankalaev yet. There's, you know, you've got Khalil Roundtree Jr. who keeps knocking people out and being really scary. Like, that'd be a good fight. I mean, it's still a really weak division, right? Because you have Jamahal Hill, who I don't think was very good, but he had his place as number one contender. Yuri Prochazka, who, again, is not very good, but, like, puts on entertaining fights. Then it's Ankalaev. Then it's Błachowicz. And then you kind of hit, you know, now we're back to Rakic, Johnny Walker, Khalil Roundtree. Like, okay, well, once you get that low in the rankings, we basically don't need to see the champion fight those guys. So yeah, let's get him in there. Pull Derek Lewis off that fucking card. Stop making Derek Lewis fight five rounds. Yeah, just have Alex Pereira and him fight for three rounds. And yeah, sounds good to me.
Yeah. Okay.
Man.
All right. But we're a little out of order. Let's go back to the beginning of the main card then. Unless there's anything else about Hill and Pereira you want to talk about.
No, I mean, just like it's finally exciting to have a champion that, like, it feels like somebody needs to come and dethrone and who has an aura about them. I hope Izzy and Drickus fight, and then I hope Izzy moves up. That'd be a cool fight to see at 205 as well. Because I could watch those guys fight 1,000 times, even though as a human being, I don't want to watch someone fight 1,000 times. It's fucked up. But that's an extremely, extremely entertaining. And remember, like, Izzy slept him. It'd be awesome to see that fight again. Anyway, all right. That's all I got to say. Do you have anything else to say about Alex Pereira?
No, you're much higher
on him than I am.
I am. I just, it was pretty sweet to me. But anyway.
And cool shorts.
Yeah, I loved it.
It really reminded me, they brought back fucking Face the Pain and the stupid gladiator shit, and then they're like, oh yeah, but the cool thing that, like, allows people to have character in the cage is their, like, shorts and their logos and their flags. We're only going to let a handful of them have it. I was like, come on, guys. You're making me listen to Face the Pain again. Like, the least you could do is let the fighters have their own shorts.
I hope they keep that going. Like, it was very popular, so.
I will. Oh, you mean the shorts? Not Face the Pain.
Shorts.
Okay. I thought you meant Face the Pain. I was like, I'll probably stop watching.
No. The shorts. It's a very small thing that fighters can use to express themselves, and I really liked it. So,
well, it's fucking crazy to me that they only have like three or four options beforehand, because it was like a general sports team. Pick a hockey team. Pick a baseball team. Pick an NFL team. They have like 10,000 different jerseys. Like, it's not all the same.
Yeah, but they don't get a choice in that either. It's like, all right, here's your home, here's your away, here's your alternate jerseys. Like, maybe they're like a throwback. Like, you don't get a say in that. So.
Hold on. Then there's like the Susan G. Komen breast cancer awareness game. Then there's the support our troops. Now everyone's wearing camo. Then they have like a retro week. Then they have like a like swinging 60s week. Like they have 10,000 variations of sports jerseys, like all throughout the season. Yeah, it's they constantly are changing stuff. So yeah, come on, Venom. You can. I know you're making a lot of money, or you're paying a lot of money to pump out four different colors and nothing else. But Jesus, let's have a little pizzazz. Anyway,
all right.
Bo Nickel, Cody Brundage. Tell me your thoughts.
My thoughts.
Yeah.
Honestly, like I agree with what Bo Nickel did at the end. Like, for someone who is as hyped up for his like wrestling ability and acumen, like he got the job done in the end with his wrestling, you know, but I definitely expected it to be way, way more lopsided than it was. And again, that could have been, I don't know if that was like, okay, this was like nerves at the moment, kind of like we talked about before, like not having success early, having that kind of snowball in itself. Or if that really was just like Cody Brundage's ability. I don't know. Like, it could be either one. It could be a mix of those two. You know, because there was one time where, like, Bo Nickel went for a takedown and Cody Brundage just, like, reversed it, you know? So I just
had that one moment where he threw him past, right? He had, like, got an underhook and just chucked him off, which was pretty cool.
Yeah. So, and I was like, because we had talked about this too, you know, like, Bo Nickel was hyped up to be this like incredible wrestler and like all of his like, you know, accolades and accomplishments. And Cody Brundage was just some poor guy that was put there.
Yeah.
I think I don't know. I don't know if I need to credit Cody more or just like, okay, Bo Nickel was a little bit overhyped.
I would say don't credit Cody more. And here's my example for why. In the two lowest skilled fights of the night, which I think were Marina Rodriguez, Jessica Andrade, and Cody Brundage, Bo Nickel, almost all the fighters decided that like just throwing unset up out of range spinning back fists, or Jessica Andrade being like, I'm going to try to like, you know, Marina Rodriguez is down on the ground throwing up kicks and just gone to try to figure out how to get in. She does like a little like 7-point turn spin move to try to get like around the legs to get into side control and then just land straight into guard. Just like useless spin moves because they don't have any idea of what else to do. When we get to the Max Holloway fight, we'll talk about actually good spin moves. But yeah, Cody Brundage just like came out there and just started like windmilling his arms and spinning and doing like he did obviously didn't have like any like super thought out thing. He just was like, I'm just gonna go out there and be crazy. And in his mind, being crazy is like, I'm just gonna do a spinning backhand. And it's like, that's not super useful. Like, you could have done a flying knee, you could have practiced an uppercut, you could have a front kick, you could have, you know, like something. But no, spin moves. So not good. And then yeah, the thing with Bo Nickel that I'll say is like, it'd be really great. There were a couple of times where a lot of the time Cody Brundage was doing a good job of like neutralizing as Bo Nickel was trying to advance to the next position. Mm-hmm. But I never saw out of Bo Nickel what you typically see out of a lot of like these American wrestlers that are really high level collegiate wrestlers like Daniel Cormier, like Dan Henderson, Mark Coleman, blah, 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 blah. We don't need to like list them all, but is getting to a position of dominance and then freeing up their hands to throw ground and pound. There's no damage that he inflicts. He's just hunting for submissions like this is a grappling match. Mm-hmm. He's not utilizing anything to, hey, I'm in a position, I need to soften this guy up so I can move to the next one. He's just so obsessed about getting to the next position. Which is not good. And then the few times that he was throwing strikes, it was like from the like worst position he was in, right? It was when his, you know, Cody had 2-on-1 and was trapping his posting hand. And so he was like kind of like just rapping on the side of his head with his knuckles. So that's what I would have wanted to see out of him, right? Is okay, you've gotten to this position. We don't need to keep going to the back, right? We don't need to have this mindset of like, let's just keep getting to a more advantageous position until you can go for either a rear naked choke or when you're off your back, like you've got them in a triangle. Let's post up here and let's throw some strikes, which didn't happen.
Yeah.
And so that makes me a little hesitant to like see his upside, right? Because the other person that we've seen struggle with that, I know it's men's division versus women's division, but it's Mackenzie Dern, right? Very potent grappling, but like she never throws ground and pound, really. She just kind of is trying to go for that submission. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Is there anything else to say? Like,
no, not really.
You should fight Chris Weidman, right? Like, I think it's kind of a shit or get off the pot situation. He keeps being like, I only have 6 fights. You know, I probably need 6 or 7 more before I fight for the title. And it's like, I can't watch 6 more Cody Brundages or even 3 more Cody Brundages.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
If they're going to do that, like if they really want to give him 8 fights in like 2 years, put him at the like make him the curtain jerker and like just let him rack up rounds then. Don't put him at, you know, this main card position where we're supposed to be impressed by him. You know, he needs to just like, and stop fighting once every like 6 months. Like they need to put him on a card every few weeks and just be like, just stay in shape. And we're just going to give you bodies to practice with. Or Chris Weidman, have him fight Chris Weidman, right? If you can't defeat the mummy of Chris Weidman, you probably should go to the PFL for a little bit and then come back when you're ready.
No, I think Chris Weidman is a good matchup for him. Yeah. And for Chris Weidman, I think it's good.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah.
Cause I think Chris Weidman's knees and neck and shoulders and ankles and spine are all so shot that he won't be able to really out wrestle, Cody. But I also think that like, he'll be a threat everywhere that the fight like goes. Like he'll at least punch. He'll eye gouge. He'll do something. Because I think that's another thing too. Is like we just still haven't seen any offense, and it's not necessarily the Calvin Kattar Aljamain Sterling thing where it's like so masterful in negating it. It's the opponents are just so they're still his opponents are still so green that they're not trying to throw anything back. You know, they're not trying to like disrupt anything that he's doing. They're just trying to stop him from advancing. And so then it ends up becoming this really boring fight where like, you know, it all just becomes about positional advancement, not who's dealing damage, who's like trying to make something happen. That was way more time than we should have talked about. I'm falling asleep thinking about it. let's move on. Right. Let's.
Because the next few fights were very.
Oh, dude, these were. I mean, this card really was the encapsulation of everything in MMA. You have the absolute dumb thinking of Jalen Turner and Hanata Moicano. You have stupid spin moves. You have squash matches that do work in Kayla Harrison and then don't work in Bo Nickel. And then, like, some high-quality fighting.
Yeah.
The need to absolutely kill your opponent, like, 10 times in the ring before they actually fall.
All right, so Oliveira versus Sarukian. Like, I really like this match. I do agree with the decision, but I do want to talk about it because this basically came down to a what do you award more, like what do you essentially attribute more to winning the round, like positioning or like being like having submission attempts? You know, that's what I feel like it came down to. Because you had like the very beginning, in the very first part of the first round, Oliveira like jumps into a guillotine. And it's like pretty tight in, right? Mm-hmm. But Sarukian is able to escape and then just controls from basically the top position the whole time. I think he actually got towards the end, Oliveira got another attempt. Like, he was trying to get into a triangle, I think, at the end. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, it was like, okay, after that guillotine attempt, it was like Sarukian dominating in. Oliveira's guard, and that kind of happened a lot in the second round as well, where but Sarukian was more dominant, you know, on top. And then the third round, like, again, was mostly for the vast majority of the round Sarukian dominating and like with his wrestling,
And landing ground and pound.
He did land some great ground and pound, especially in round two, I'll say.
And with the new rules for judging, if one person deals more damage than the other, like it's tiered judging, right? So if the damaging is even, then you go to who has better grappling and submission attempts. But if you can say one person did more damage that round despite submission attempts, that person wins the round. So that's where I think.
So you think it was the actual damage from the ground and pad as opposed to.
Because there wasn't a ton of damage. And even on the feet, like, it was pretty even. And Armin did throw his jab, he was whipping Oliveira's head back. Like, that was the one thing I was really impressed by. I mean, there was multiple things. The entire fight was very impressive. But one of the new things was Armin having a jab and having it be, I mean, just a piston. His rear hand would go out of position when he threw it. But, I mean, that jab was money. Yeah. Nah, man. Armin won. I think Armin, the right man, won. This was a fight that should have been five rounds, though, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, like, that's what I felt after watching it. I was like, damn, like, let this, you know, the tide started to turn a little bit, even though that choke at the very end wasn't in tight, he wasn't getting it, and Armin was fine and stood up immediately afterwards. Like, that two more rounds of that would have been awesome. I'm excited to see Armin against Islam, even though Islam just got his fight announced with Dustin Poirier. Which, like, I'm happy for Dustin, but I'm also like, I don't think this is going to go any better than Dustin Khabib. So great fight. This will get lead into the next fight. Justin Gaethje, Max Holloway, really lending a lot of weight to that BMF belt. Let's get Chucky Olives up there, you know? Charles Oliveira has beaten Dustin Poirier and Justin Gaethje and finished them both, and they were the guys that fought for the BMF title. Like, he's a real BMF. Let's bring him up. Let's have him fight Max Holloway. That'll be a rematch for both of them. That's what I want to see. That's a good fight. The Armin fight, good. That's high level MMA, and it's awesome to see. It just should have been five rounds. And it was great having it on this card, but that would have been, compared to all these other fucking terrible Apex and Fight Night cards, like, this would have been a good main event on any of those. Stop giving us Derek Lewis main events. Give us Armin Saryukin, Charles Oliveira ones. Have you seen that stat that, like, George St. Pierre, there's only, like, a handful of fighters, and all of them are titled? Anderson Silva, George St. Pierre, I can't remember who the other one is, but all of them, they're the only people that have more main events than Derek Lewis.
What? No. Wait, there's no way. Let me look.
Yeah. Like, if you look for who has the most main events in the UFC, Derek Lewis is, like, easily maybe in the top five or top 10. And you're like, why? It doesn't make any sense. Randy Couture, Anderson Silva, Tito Ortiz, John Jones, Vitor Belfort, BJ Penn, George St. Pierre. Oh, maybe it's not as high as I thought. Maybe in the past, like, 10 years?
I don't know.
No, this can't be right. Yeah, let me find this stat. I'll find it.
Okay. But yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of implications with this lightweight fight. I think Saryukin can kind of wait in the wings for the Makhachev and Poirier winner. Mm-hmm. I think he's just posted for that, and that leaves Oliveira kind of, okay, like, where to go from here, which, unless there's more you want to talk about the Oliveira fight, which will bring us to Holloway versus Gaethje.
Oh, just sex on screen is what that was.
Oh my god, this fight, holy shit, was so
phenomenal.
Good. Like, oh my god, just everything about this fight. Like, first of all, Holloway looked great.
Phenomenal.
He was, like, because we were talking about, like, okay, like, will he adjust to the weight well? Will he still have the speed? Will he still have the endurance? You know, like, how is he doing his bulk and everything like that? Like, no, he looked so good. at 155. You know, and it wasn't like Gaethje looked bad. Like Gaethje looked good too, and he was having like good success. Like he was, you know, doing some really good leg kicks to Holloway, which I was, as soon as those happened, I was like, oh man, like is this just going to be like a repeat? You know, it just like, but Gaethje's just bigger now. Like, but no, it was great. And to end the first round with that jump spinning back kick that broke Gaethje's nose, like, oh my God.
I part of me wonders what in like the alternate reality this fight looks like if that kick doesn't land and that nose doesn't get absolutely obliterated. Right. And that's one of those kicks where it's like, that's a well earned, right? Like that's damage he inflicted, like throwing a technique. He went to that kick constantly throughout the night and was landing it, not to the head, but to the body. I do wonder a little bit though, because Justin Gaethje had said after the Charles Oliveira fight, he had gotten his nose repaired. And anytime, since nose is not bone, anytime you have surgery on it or break it, it makes it easier to break the next time. So, yeah, and that seemed to really, I mean, Justin Gaethje is an absolute animal, and credit to him. But, like, it did seem like that, which rightly so, right? For any human, it would bother him. But it did seem to throw him slightly off of his game. And, man, yeah. And yeah, Max looked great, right? Especially after that third Alexander Volkanovski fight. Like, he looked not just a little bit slower and, like, not as crisp.
Yeah.
And I really do wonder, right? I know he can make the weight, but it does feel like he is, when you see him, or like when you saw him fight Arnold Allen or Yair Rodriguez, it's a very different style matchup. But the consistency of speed and pop on his punches at this weight class, I was like, he just looks like that 145 does drain him a little too much, right? Like we're not getting the best max performances we could if he fought at 155. I mean, he looked so sharp. Constantly switching stances, constantly moving, using both kind of the Eddie Alvarez and Dustin Poirier game plan, right? Eddie Alvarez was so adamant, you have to go to the body against Justin Gaethje. And he was going to the body with jabs, crosses, that spinning back kick. He was using a couple teeps up the middle, like just peppering him right in the body. And then, hitting him with jabs, hitting him with cross, like just everything that Max Holloway does super well, he was doing. It was phenomenal. And that's the thing, is like, this would have been an amazing, like, all-time, like, this is an amazing fight, even if that finish hadn't come.
Yeah.
Right? But, like, cut out those last 10 seconds, it's still an amazing fight.
Yeah, because let's not take away anything from Justin Gaethje either. Justin Gaethje is the first person to knock down Max Holloway.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was, like, because throughout the whole, leading up to that point, it was very clear that Max was dominating. And then when Gaethje knocked him down, it was like, oh, is this will this like turn? You know, and it does beg that question, like, okay, if he didn't have a broken nose for like two rounds before that, what would that moment have looked like? Would that have shifted the momentum entirely? And
I will say Max hopped up instantly.
Yeah, he did. He did pop right back. But that's how he is. Like, that man is just
almost unkillable. It is one of those things where, like, I hate to, it sounds so hyperbolic, but, like, we're probably not going to see a lot of people like Max, even if we watch MMA for like 10 more years, right?
With the skill, the durability, but then the fucking balls, like,
oh my God,
look, this is, he knew it going into that fifth round. He could have cruised, he could have done, like, he didn't need anything to do. You know, he was like, I won this fight. I don't need to do anything. You know, my kids are here. My family's here. I don't need to I don't need to put any risk. I'm done. I'm good. You know, let me get my paycheck and everything. But with 10 seconds to go against someone who has one punch knockout power, he just pulls it to he moves from an advantage position by the cage, just walks out and says, let's finish this right here in the middle. And put a show on for everyone. And basically both of them just like start, oh my, just swinging. Like,
yeah, it was the old Ricardo Lamas fight, right? Like, point at the center and just swing.
Yeah, and it was like...
And this shows even the... I mean, it is amazing. All of the grandiose things you're saying about, like, who's got the cojones to, like, actually do that and make that choice. But, like, the two things that stuck out to me, other than the finish, which was, like, I mean, truly one of the best finishes ever.
Yeah.
When he walked to the cage, or the center, he didn't walk in a straight line. He circled to Justin Gaethje's outside to walk to the middle, so he's keep turning him, so he still was being, like, defensively sound as he prepared to do this stupid thing. In the Ricardo Lamas one, when he pointed at the ground, he just threw hooks to the head. And so when Ricardo Lamas ducked down, Justin will miss like three or four over the top of Ricardo Lamas. In this one, if you notice, he goes to the head, and then the two punches before the knockout one are to the body.
Yeah.
So he's changing his level, boom, and then up top. Like, he was, even in that moment, he was thinking about, like, okay, where should this shot placement be? He wasn't just going crazy. I mean, he was going crazy, but he was, like, also thinking about, okay, this is where I should be landing my shots, and then, ooh, face first. And yeah, poor Justin, his nose had to smash into the ground, too, after, like, getting smashed by Max. Ugh. That's a
brutal, brutal knockout. But, like, what an incredible ending to that. Like,
yeah.
Like, props to Justin, props to Max. Like, this is going to go down as one of the greatest fights in UFC history. Like, oh my God.
Yeah. This is everything you want in a fight, right? Like, extremely high level technical skill. The drama of, like, the back and forth, the, like, lead up to the fight. And then just an all-time great finish. I mean, there's little to say other than, like, if you need to get someone into MMA and you need, like, you've got, like, three or four fights to show them, like, this needs to be one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. God, yeah. It was. And I know he wants to fight Topuria, and I want to see that, but part of me is, again, I keep thinking, like, wow, he looks so good at 155. I want to see him. He's getting close to the end of his, you know, UFC run. He's 32.
Yeah.
We could have him at 155 fight Dustin again, Charles Oliveira.
I was going to say, I think him versus Charles Oliveira would be.
Oh, Conor McGregor could come down after his fight with Michael Chandler, right? Like, we could have a Conor Holloway rematch from, I don't know, 2012. I would love to see kind of him, right? There was talk of right, when it was Eddie Alvarez, Justin Gaethje, Dustin Poirier, and then Michael Chandler a little bit, right? They called themselves like the kings of violence. But Charles Oliveira beat all of them, right? I wanted, like, he needs to get his props as like a king of violence, and now Max Holloway is coming in and making a claim.
Yeah.
Like, I just want to see that rotation. Because those are fun action fights. And you've got this BMF belt now, so you can put it on a pay-per-view. People get pay-per-view points. Silly belt, but I just want to see him. I want to see him at his best so that he can give these kind of performances. Because I wonder if going to one... Because he did not... He looked bigger than Justin, too. He didn't look like he was, like, small.
He didn't look bigger than Justin, but he, like... I mean, it's to me, but he definitely looked like just a little bit like healthier, like more filled out and just like, you know, 155 though is one of those like, man, it's such a fucking weird and insane division where you got people like pretty much everyone's got skill, everyone's got speed, but then you have some like freaks who come in who are like 20 pounds heavier, like, you know, that are just like so big at 155. Like,
yeah. Like Islam.
Oh. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's basically no one in the top 15 that isn't a good fight for him to fight, right? Because he could fight Dustin Poirier. He could fight Michael Chandler. He could fight Rafael Fiziev, Dan Hooker, Jalen Turner, even though he just had like a donkey brain move. That'd be a fun fight. Rafael Dos Anjos. Like, that'd be... Yeah, it would. He's gonna fight Topuria though.
So that's the thing. Like Holloway, I think could chase after, you know, a title shot either at 145 or 155. I think either one of those routes would be fine for him. I think he's fucking earned it. But I said I hate the BMF belt. I really do. I think it symbolizes everything like stupid and whatnot. But now that Max has it, I could literally see him just like basically only taking insane, like thunderous matchups like for people against this, like him versus Charles Oliveira for this. Like
that's what I'm saying.
Like it creates a new type of thing to look forward to. Like not just who's the best in the division, but it's like, okay, who make like maybe I'm buying into this now more. Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm still just riding on the high from this fight, yeah. And I'll go right back to hating this stupid ass belt.
Well, I mean, it is a stupid belt because we should be able to appreciate, like, this fight didn't need this belt on it to make it any more valid, right? Like, this fight, a fight that needs it to make it valid would be something like a really, like, a very bad fight or a very boring fight. And you're like, well, it was for the title. Like, so they fought a little bit more boring. Like, well, it still proves that they're the best, right? This is a fight that sells itself. This fight could have been on the card. This could have been the only fight on the card. And it's a worthwhile, like, pay-per-view.
Yeah. You know?
Like, this is fine. And you don't need a belt. Like, the belt did not confer anything better onto this. So, I know they need it contractually for pay-per-view sales. But now, like you said, let's, and Max has so many miles on him, right? If we assume that, like, I mean, Max's athletic prime is probably already gone, or he's either on the tail end of it. Let's have the best fights with him and get him paid. With this belt, right? Let's, you know, he's kind of this elder statesman where I think even if he fought Alexander Volkanovsky today, like Volk seems to have him. I mean, it's an extremely different style matchup between Volk and Gaethje. Right. I think Volk still beats him. Right.
I do right now.
Yeah. There's no why. I know he wants to chase it, but I mean, we could have Charles Oliveira. We could have Justin Gaethje. We could have Conor McGregor. We could have Michael Chandler. We could have Dan Hooker. Right. And then if Topuria, who has fought at 155, wants to move up and fight Max, right, for the BMF belt, right, him go, well, I've got one belt at 145, and they're calling it, right? They had Justin Gaethje announced as the reigning, defending, undisputed BMF title. Like, so I guess people are counting that as like a belt. So you could say that Max Holloway is a two belt champion now or some shit. Like,
I guess
regardless
of
all that stupid, like, what's canon, what's not canon, who gives a shit? Like, let's just make the best fights we can for Max, and those best fights are at 155 because that's still the best division. Yeah, that's what I say. Chucky Olives, Dustin Poirier, Michael Chandler, Conor McGregor, like let's have them fight Max, because I could see Max beating all of them too. And wouldn't it be crazy for Max Holloway to come up to 155 and in like four fights, have a better resume than like Islam Makhachev has at that division?
Yeah,
like, that'd be crazy. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, an amazing fight. One of the best. We're not going to see that kind of fight, right? Because it does require someone like Justin Gaethje and someone like Max Holloway.
Yeah. Two very explosive, very game. Like, yeah. Yeah. It was the perfect mix of the right people at the right time.
At the right time is especially like, the longer you watch, I mean, you know, but I'm saying it to the general we, like, the longer you watch this, the longer you realize that, like, the timing is so important, right?
Yeah.
It's just, like, you could always have those, like, oh, man, what about this? Or, oh, this person got injured and we never got to see this. Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Phenomenal fight. We have to wrap up, but any notes? I mean, Zhang Weili had to beat Yan Xianan three times, it felt like. Kudos to her for doing that.
But also kudos to fucking Yan Xiao. I'm a huge Yan Xiao fan now. Like, dude, she was choked out at the end of the first round.
Mm-hmm.
Like, stumbles to her feet, gets to the corner, and is like, what the fuck happened? Like,
yeah. It didn't seem like she woke up until like round three.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, you know, and because I think they scored the second round as a 10-8 round.
Yeah.
But then she started to turn it around a little bit until the very last round, like rounds three, rounds four, like she had an advantage. She was like, you know, knocking Zhang Weili like to the ground a couple times, you know, was controlling range and like wasn't taking big shots from that or too many big shots from Zhang Weili. Like I was very impressed with it, you know, and just she had it's exactly as you said, like Zhang Weili had a huge advantage in the grappling, you know, in wrestling department and actually stuck to the plan and used it. So good for fucking her. Like we saw throughout the night that that was not the case when people had advantages, you know, but I mean, but even then, like there were times where she like put all of her energy into trying to like get that position or get that, you know, get that submission. And when it didn't happen, it was like, uh-oh, what, like what's happened? There was a real moment where I thought like, wow, Yang Shen now is going to take this now because Zhang Weili looks exhausted. She's gassed now from all that effort she put in. But then she was able to rally. Maybe she got a second win, whatever. And I was just very impressed by both of them, you know. And I would love to see them eventually run it back again because I think a lot of people counted out Yang Shen now. And I think they said like, oh, like it's just going to be Zhang Weili dominating, you know, for all five rounds or get an early submission or not even knock out in the first round or two.
Mm-hmm.
But she's got fucking grit, man. That girl, holy shit.
Yeah.
She's got it. She's got a lot of ability. And I think we'll give anyone, you know, in the top, you know, three in that division, you know, I think she beats all of them then. And we have to see a rematch between these two.
Yeah. I mean, the boogeyman that's kind of floating out there in that division is Tatiana Suarez, because her grappling is way better than Zhang Weili's. And I would imagine, you know, if she comes in healthy, because that's been the biggest issue, she'd be able to kind of roll over. Because even, like, some of Zhang Weili's grappling decisions in this fight were not, like, top tier.
Yeah.
And so, but luckily, Yang Shanan had lower grappling ability, so she could kind of get away with making some errors. Not going to be able to do that with Tatiana Suarez. And then at that point, it's kind of like, well, I don't really pick Yang Shanan to beat Tatiana Suarez either because you're going to have an even more dominant grappler. But then who's next in the rankings for Yang Shanan after Tatiana Suarez? Number three is Amanda Lemos, who I would pick Yang Shanan to beat because Zhang Weili was able to neutralize Amanda Lemos's stand-up. And then number four is Jessica Andrade, who spin move galore and just winging hooks from her hips. And we already saw Yang Shanan just absolutely destroy her. So it's this weird thing where it's kind of shallow at the moment in this division. This used to be such a wonderful division when you had Rose and Zhang Weili and Andrade and Yuan Yan Jacek. And now it's really thinned out. So yeah, I could see Yang Shanan fighting again for a title, maybe in like one fight, right?
Yeah.
You've got Zhang Weili against Tatiana Suarez. You do a rematch of Yang Shanan and Jessica Andrade, I assume it'll go basically the same way, and then you've got the winner of those two fights fighting.
Yeah.
No, I mean good solid performance, right? This is one of these fights like we were talking about, right? Like the BMF belt doesn't confer anything more on top of the Justin Gaethje fight. This one is where like the belt does confer a little bit more, right? Because it was an engaging fight, but it wasn't like a barn burner or something where I go like, holy shit, you got to watch this. Right. But the fact that there was this belt, to me, like this is for who's the best in the division. That's what it added the weight to it. Yeah, I mean, good fight, like, right? And we have direction in these divisions. We got the announcement of, was it three fights as well?
Yeah, yep.
So Makhachev.
Makhachev versus Poirier. Sean Strickland versus Kosta on the same card at 302.
And then a five-round fight, too.
Yeah, five-round. And then 303, the big event of the summer is going to be headlined by Conor McGregor versus Michael Chandler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we already know it's going to be Armin, or at least Dana has said, which of course it can change. That guy lies 10,000 times, changes his mind. Armin will fight the winner of Islam and
Poirier.
Yep. And then, I bet you though, if Conor McGregor beats
That's Michael also going to be at 170.
It doesn't matter, dude. The second Conor has one win, they're going to want to put him in a title shot, especially if Islam beats Dustin, because then you have, like, the Khabib, Conor, you know. We run that back, and that package will run 10,000 times. I don't think Conor's going to win, though. I'll a little early bet Michael Chandler beats him. But then, dude, give me Michael Chandler versus Dustin Poirier. Or not Dustin Poirier, Michael Chandler versus Max Holloway. Like, let's get it going. But then also I think Dana White had said that it was going to be Topuria, and Topuria even said that he'll fight Max. So we'll probably see Max move down.
Yeah.
I mean, that'll be a good fight, though. God damn.
That will be really good. But
yeah,
basically, look, UFC 300 lived up to the hype, had amazing fights. Many things that you could point out to, like, hey, for better or for worse, this is the current state of MMA right now. Like,
yeah.
It was a very accurate, you know, statement that. And it's just like you said, this is what I wanted from this card. We have direction in most of these weight classes now. We know where they're going. Like, we know who's established. It's like a very clear tier now. And yeah. I'm happy with that. I love it.
Yeah, the only thing I'm sad about is I think Justin Gaethje is basically done at the top of this division. His nose is busted. It probably will be. It kind of reminds me of Rory McDonald when he got his nose busted up in the Robbie Lawler fight, and then it just kept breaking every single fight, unless he was extremely defensively responsible and like mostly did a lot of grappling, which is just not how Justin Gaethje fights. So yeah, I hope he heals up. Maybe do Justin Gaethje versus Renato Moicano next, so we can kind of right the wrong of Moicano winning. but truly a great fight. It really, better than 200, better than 300, really 100. Phenomenal. Yeah, better than 100, 200, one of the top five cards of all time.
I loved it.
Yeah, and the amazing thing is the UFC is so deep. It has so many fighters under contract that this coming Saturday, it's Alex Perez, Mateusz Nicolau, and Ryan Spann versus Bogdan Gusev. I guess they don't have as deep of talent as I thought. Great card. Could have taken a couple of those and made them main events, though. That's all I'm saying.
It could have, but then we wouldn't have had this card to talk about this whole day. So
That's true.
I loved it. And to wrap up, we have a bet to settle.
Yeah, I think yeah. So what am I watching here?
What are you watching? All right, here's the thing. I wanted to ask you, this bad MMA movie, does it just have to have like an MMA athlete in it?
Oh,
in a bad movie, or is it about MMA?
I would say, however you want to interpret that, just a bad MMA movie, a bad mixed martial arts movie. Right? Does Napoleon Dynamite count as that? Because Rex Kwon Do is in it. I don't know. Like, you can. I'll let you decide. Yeah.
All right.
Choice on this one.
Okay. Because this was my original pick before I even really thought about it this much. You are gonna watch. Wait. Let me hide this up a little bit. I gotta get the date for this here. Hold on. Give me 1 second. Okay.
Dead
you
air.
Have to watch the okay. Yes. Okay. This is a perfect. The 2008 classic, Never Back Down.
Oh man, all right. I mean, at least I've seen that one, so I know what I should expect. Yeah, Never Back Down.
Oh yes.
All right, I will watch Never Back Down, and I will make sure.
Oh fuck, Amber Heard is in this. What the hell?
Yeah, man, this was like a big movie when it came out. It had I don't know how to pronounce his name. He won the Academy Award for Blood Diamond.
It was also in Gladiator.
Yeah. This like actually had I don't know who Sean Ferris is, but apparently he's a big a big guy. But yeah, all of the names of the stars in this movie are blue on Wikipedia, which means they actually are known by people. It has a cinematographer who did Lincoln Lawyer, Black Sails, Daredevil. Like, this was a real movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Made for a budget of $20 million back in 2008. I mean, it was, yeah, but filmed in 2007. So, like, this was a real movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. There you go. That is your movie to watch.
Yeah. Ooh, it won the MTV Movie Award for Best Fight. Well, that's going to be. Goddamn. Yeah. Well, all right. I will watch it, and I will give you my full thoughts and opinions about it. How long is this thing?
It's like an hour.
It's 115 fucking minutes.
Oh yeah.
Jesus, it's almost 2 hours? Dude, I'm gonna die one day, you realize that? Like, I'll cease to exist and make any more memories, and one of the 2 hours of my life will be spent watching this thing.
The reason why, because the other movie I was gonna say was gonna be fucking Cradle to the Grave with Jet Li and fucking but also he had like the chairman from Iron Chef was in it and DMX is in it, but I was asking if it's a MMA movie because I'm pretty sure Tito Ortiz is in it. Like, he is one of the underground fighters that Jet Li has to fight.
That's good. Well, I would have preferred that, but I'll watch Never Back Down. Yeah, damn. All right. Well, that's Jet Li. He's wearing a choker too.
Yeah.
Brutal. Dude, the early 2000s. What a weird time.
Great time.
What a weird time. All right. Well, I will watch that. And yeah, because we won't have much to talk about moving forward for a little bit. So it's going to be.
It's going to be
Never Back Down. All right, man.
All right. So why don't you sign us off then?
All right. Well, this has been Just Two Fight Fans. I'm one Fight Fan, Stuart.
I'm the other, Colin.
And come listen to us next time as we talk about Never Back Down.
Won't be the only thing.
Maybe. Yeah.
I don't know. Hopefully. Depends how much you love it.
Oof.